out of bullets. It's the apocalypse. Rampaging hordes of starving vagabonds, opportunist looters, and every threat short of flesh-eating zombies are surrounding you. All you have left are your fists, your trusty knife, and your will to survive. Or maybe not. Maybe there's another option. Maybe there's something you could build that would give you an edge from a distance. Maybe you could manufacture your own bow and your own arrows. But how? And out of what? Hello, everyone. I'm Buck Green, broadcast director of the ISCQC, and today we're joined by the backyard boyer himself, Nicholas Tomihama, who will share his skills in showing you how to create, train with, and use your own hunting and survival bow, made with simple materials you can find down at your local Home Depot or even among the crumbled remains of what was once civilization. To that end, we've brought in Nicholas Tomihama. Hello, Nicholas.
Hi, Buck.
Now, everyone, Nick is a native of Hawaii who used to spend his time as a child making toys and then weapons from household items. He made his first bow at the age of 5, and today he's written several books on archery, improvised bows, and arrows. You can learn more about Nicholas and his work at his website, www.backyardboyer, that's backyard, B-O-W-Y-E-R, .com. Nick, I think we should start talking about the basics, and I can't think of anything more basic than why archery? What makes a bow such a formidable survival tool and even weapon?
Well, the bow and arrow, you know, archery has been part of humanity since the very beginning. Some would say that archery is what really separates us, you know, along with fire, as sort of supreme animals, able to manipulate our environment and better survive than, you know, other creatures in order to create our civilization. You know, for thousands of years, man has used the bow to gain an advantage over not only, you know, nature and, you know, being able to hunt from a distance, but also to defend themselves from a distance as well.
Now, most people rely on guns and knives, or they say that's the modern weapon of the day. But I think what's always on the mind of survivalists is the fact that guns run out of ammunition. Knives are not a distance weapon. They're only good within touching distance. Is it safe to say that it's the distance that makes the difference here, the ability to reach out and touch someone from far away?
I would say that is the factor here, yes.
Now, your reputation as backyard bowyer was born out of your unique ability and development of using common materials to craft a bow that could really be used in even a survival situation. What are some of the types of materials that someone could use for creating their own bow?
Well, when you're creating your own bow, really you could use just about anything in your surrounding area, you know, as long as it can take repeated flexing and bending, which is the kind of stress that a bow needs to be under. You could use wood for this purpose, and there are a lot of modern materials, man-made materials, that also work for this, fiberglass being some of them. And one thing that I've really been developing are the use of PVC pipes, just common plastic plumbing pipes that can be utilized as a bow material.
Now, you say repeated bending and flexing. I think most people understand how a bow works, but how do I determine that a given material is flexible enough yet strong enough?
Well, a good way to test that out would be if you're looking at something and you want to potentially use it. One way to test this would actually be to flex it, you know, keep yourself a safe distance from it. And this is what I do if I were to, say, make a PVC pipe bow. You actually want to flex it away from yourself. So you can place one end of this item against the ground, hold the other in your hand, and actually push against it with your other hand so that you're sort of flexing it away from yourself. So if anything were to break, it would break outwards and away from you. And generally, for most bows, you only need it to Flex itself maybe about 6 to 12 inches.
Now, how do you define 6 to 12 inches of flex? If I were to put it up against a wall and brace the bottom of it, I should be able to flex the top of it away from the wall by about 6 to 12 inches?
By about 12 inches or so.
Okay. And how do I know if a material is – I mean, there are a lot of things you could probably flex once. I'm assuming that one of the requirements is it has to go back to the straight line when you're done flexing?
It has to go close to the straight line, and that's another aspect when making a bow. When you take a material, it also needs to be able to have a little bit of forgiveness to it. For example, if you were to make a bow out of wood, you would start with a straight piece of wood, and as you flex it, as you start, you know, first trying to bend it, shaping it to bend, and then you put a string on it, and as you shoot it, slowly the wood will keep that shape more, and it's a term called set, where the material will permanently deform just a little bit, and that's part of it getting used to bending.
Now, do you do any tests when you're testing a material? Let's say you've got a given length of PVC, because there's a lot of popular books on the market now, including your own, on how to make bows out of PVC. How do I know that that isn't going to shatter and break on me? How many times do you flex it when you're testing it?
Well, with PVC, the first thing, especially if you're not sure where it's been stored, like if you were to find a piece, because you know age and the amount of time it's spent out exposed to ultraviolet light will affect its flexibility and its strength. One thing you can do is simply take that piece, in the case of PVC, because it's a plastic and it is so flexible, you would do the same test, except you'd want to flex it about 2 feet out. And you want to make sure that you're using a length of pipe. You know, when we're dealing with PVC pipe, you want to make sure that the length is not too short. And by too short, I mean for certain diameters of pipe, say 3/4 inch diameter, which is the inside diameter of the pipe, you want to make sure that the length of pipe is no shorter than 4 feet, because what will happen is that if it's too short, you increase your chances of it breaking. And that's another thing. If you're unsure of the material, it's best to start long and shorten it than to start short and you have nowhere to go to kind of compensate.
Is there a ratio? Is there math that I can do to figure out, given the inside diameter of, say, a length of PVC pipe, how long I should start out?
There isn't really a set mathematical formula because each pipe is manufactured a little bit differently. They're not exactly uniform because they weren't made for making bows. But generally, 3/4 inch pipe, so you start with 3/4 inch pipe. You want to make a bow that's around 4 feet long. Like, your pipe should start off at about 4 feet in length. And as you go up the diameters, every time you go up a diameter, and they go up in 1/4 inch increments. So when you go up to 1 inch, then you want to go up to about 5 feet in length. And when you go up to 1 1/4 inches, you want to go up to around 6 feet, and so on.
So what would you say the range is in terms of functional PVC bows? Like 3/4 is the lower limit, and what would you say the upper limit would be?
The upper limit, I would say no more than 1.5 inch, and that's usually because the bow would be very heavy, it would be very long, and unless you have very large hands, it would be hard to hold on to it, and it would also affect arrow flight because it's so wide in the handle.
Right, right. All right, so can you just give me a quick summary of starting at 3/4 inch pipe, it's a 4-foot bow, and then if I go up 1/4 inch, how much longer do I go?
You go about a foot longer. That's
okay,
just
so a foot for every 1/4 inch increase in diameter?
Yes.
All right. I'm sure most people know how deadly a bow can be. They've been used since practically the beginning of mankind, like you said. They've been used in warfare. The bow was one of the principal weapons of, say, medieval warfare. How effective, though, could a homemade PVC bow like the one we've just described actually be in the field? How close can I get to an actual bow that I go and buy at a sporting goods store in terms of its range and its effectiveness?
Well, in terms of range and effectiveness, you know, the bows that we're talking about here are, you would consider them, if you were talking about bows, traditional bows, meaning that they're not of the more modern type of bow, which many people are familiar of, the compound bow, which uses either, you know, wheels, pulleys, or cams to actually allow more efficiency in the bow. So bows like that are much more than you could probably make simply. But when you went, if you were to go to a sporting goods store, most of them also sell what are known as recurve bows, which means that the tips actually flex forward and the string rests on those, and long bows, which, you know, are what most people think of when they think of bows and arrows. And as far as long bows and recurves, and just from my experience, PVC bows that I've made, you can generally expect them to be as good as most commercial solid fiberglass recurves and longbows.
Now, what's the difference between a recurve and a longbow?
So, a recurve and a longbow, recurve simply means that when the bow is strung up, if you're looking at the bow, you'll actually see that the string on the tips of the bow, where the string attaches to the bow, will actually wrap around the tip of the bow. If you can imagine, you have your bow shape, and the tips will actually go forward when you're holding the bow. So what that does is that when you draw back on the string has to lift off of the tips of the bow before it pulls the rest of the bow with it. That gives you a little extra speed and power. Long bows, generally, there's going to be a clear gap between the string and the bow, and aside from the nocks or the points where the strings attach to the bow, they won't actually touch the bow from that point on.
Right. Okay, and you're saying that a PVC homemade bow that you or I could make is actually as good as most commercial recurves and longbows?
They're as good as most, if made well, if made properly, they're as good as the lower end. And by lower end, I mean usually bows that are around the $100 to $200 range in most cases. Now, there are some bows that... Oh,
go ahead.
Okay. There are some bows that are designed to be faster, and they use different materials, you know, typically wood and fiberglass. Now, these bows are the ones that you'll typically see at the sporting goods stores with the higher price tags for the recurves and the longbows. And these will typically be faster than most PVC bows, though I have made PVC bows that stack up to even these modern recurves and longbows.
Now, is that speed a function of the flex of the material itself?
The speed is a function of the material itself, and in that sense, PVC is actually a poor choice in the traditional sense of making bows because it is so flexible that it actually recovers slower than most traditional materials. Wood, for example, if you've taken any piece of wood, you know that when you flex it, it's actually very hard to bend a piece of wood, whereas plastic bends very readily. To counteract this, you know, a PVC bow needs to be designed in such a way that it maximizes its strengths, and one of its strengths is its flexibility. That's why the PVC bows that I typically make are usually no longer than 5 feet, and when strung up are actually closer to 3.5 to 4.5 feet in length, because the pipe needs to be under more strain in order to work as efficiently as the longer bows.
I remember reading somewhere that at one time bows made of yew wood were considered superior, and certain people weren't, you know, the underlings, the peasants, weren't allowed to own bows made of yew because they were considered too powerful. And I'm assuming that's a function, again, of the material being superior?
Yes. Typically because yew was considered a very good wood for making bows, and it still is, because when you make a bow out of yew, you have in one piece of wood, the way it was traditionally made, you have a material that is both resilient and able to resist breakage, but it's also hard to flex, meaning that it will recover at a much faster rate than most other woods.
Gotcha. Now, as an archer, Nicholas, what would you say the approximate effective range of accuracy for a bow like this one is? How far am I going to accurately be able to hit something?
Well, as an archer, it's mainly, with any bow, especially these bows, it's mainly about practice. So with a moderate amount of practice, your average effective range will probably be around 30 to 40 yards. And even that is pushing it a little if you are trying to be accurate in terms of hunting, say, small game or even medium to large game. You'd want to be closer. 15 yards is a good distance to be. So if you really needed to, you know, these bows would easily fire upwards of 100 yards, though accuracy does become a big problem at that sort of range.
All right. Well, Nicholas, I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of this at detail. I want to go through the steps of how to make your own PVC bow, assuming, you know, let's start from zero here and assume that you're talking to an audience of people who've never done this before and who would like to try, namely me. So I want to build my own PVC bow. Where do I begin?
Well, the first thing you're going to need is you're going to need your PVC pipe. And like I said before, if you're starting with 3/4 pipe, you want to start with a 4-foot length. And if you're starting with 1-inch pipe, you want to start with a 5-foot length.
Now, I can buy PVC at any hardware store?
Yes, you can buy PVC pipe at any hardware store. And the main important thing to keep in mind is that pipes are rated with different rating systems. The most commonly found in the U.S. is schedule, which refers to the wall thickness of the pipe. Most of my bows are made with either schedule 40 pipe, though some are made with what's called schedule 80, which is a thicker grade of pipe, almost double the internal thickness of the wall. But schedule 40 would work, and that's what most hardware and plumbing supply stores carry and sell.
Okay, so I go to my hardware store and I buy a 4-foot length of 3/4-inch schedule 40 PVC pipe. Now what?
Okay, so now what you need is my best performing bows, which are not that difficult to manufacture, require what I refer to as taper flattening, or flattening the pipe, which basically means that you're going to be heating the pipe up and actually flattening it so that it's thicker near the center and thinner near the tips. To do this...
So how do I go about doing it?
To do that, what you need is you need a heat source of some sort. Now, if you're at home or if you're going to a hardware store and you have the facilities, a heat gun works really well. You could also use an electric coil-type stovetop or a gas range. And these are all good options for generating the heat needed to heat up the pipe. Though if you are in a situation where you didn't have power, any propane torch or propane cooktop or even an open flame, if you're careful enough, will give you the heat needed to work the pipe.
Now, is PVC flammable?
PVC is flammable if you keep it in the heat too long or you heat it too fast. Generally, what you want to do is when you're heating up the pipe, you want to make sure that you're heating it gently and that you're far enough away from your heat source that you're not going to burn the pipe. Because another side effect of burning PVC pipe is that it releases dioxins and it also releases hydrogen chloride gas. As long as you're far away as, say, maybe 4 to 8 inches away from your heat source, this shouldn't be a problem. You don't want to see the pipe changing color at all.
Okay, so I don't want it to turn brown or black when I heat it.
No, you want it to stay the same color. And it's possible, even with, say, a campfire, to keep the pipe itself, if you wiped off any external soot, for the pipe to stay the same white color.
Okay. Now, you said a typical PVC bow, we've got it's 4 feet of Schedule 40, 3/4-inch pipe. We're going to heat it, and we want to flatten the ends but not the middle to start?
Yes. So what you can typically do is when you have your pipe, you want to measure the center of the pipe. So find the center of the pipe and then measure out 2 to 3 inches on either side. This is going to be for your handle. Another way to measure this is to wrap your hand around the center of the pipe so that your hand is centered around that middle marker, and that will be your handle. And that's where we'll start the flattening. And to flatten this pipe, you'll need any sort of straight board. It could be a 2x4 or a piece of steel plate, anything that is fairly flat and straight and that is ideally around 4 feet long, but it could be as long as each limb of your bow. Yes, it's half as long as your 4 foot section.
I'm assuming I need two of those because I'm going to squeeze the heated pipe between it.
If you can find a patch of ground or you have a work surface that is flat, then you only need one half of this.
Gotcha.
So you only need one of those. You could use two halves, but the easiest way to do it would be to heat the pipe up. And when you heat it up, you'll slowly start to see that after some time, the pipe will start acting almost rubber-like. And it will start to resemble almost like a wet spaghetti noodle.
Am I heating the entire pipe or just the limbs? We've sectioned off a center handle portion. Am I focusing my heat to the left and to the right of my center handle portion, or am I just heating the whole thing?
So you're heating only the portion from the outside of the handle section you marked to the tip. So if you hold your handle, that section will never be heated up. It's only the sections beyond that that will be heated.
Okay.
And you want to work one half at a time.
So don't worry about trying to heat and flatten the bottom half, let's say, until I've already done the top.
Yes.
Now, do I need to worry that heat will transmit up the other half of the bow and I'll undo my work of flattening one side of it while I'm doing the second side?
No, as long as you direct the heat over that one section, the plastic itself doesn't transmit heat very well. And because of this, you could actually hold your handle section while heating up one limb. And you wouldn't, it would be very difficult for you to get burnt if you were holding that section.
So that it's not going to actually transmit the heat. That's good to know. I didn't know that. We've taken our length of pipe, we've heated and flattened the limbs, and we've got a center handle area that is still cylindrical. Now what?
Yes. Okay. One thing to note, when you are flattening, you want the reason why I say you want to keep the handle section non, you want to keep it from getting hot, is because when you actually flatten it, and you'll actually place your pipe on the flat surface of the ground, and then you'll put your board or flat surface on top of your pipe, you're actually going to want to rest some of that on the cylindrical portion of the handle, so that when you step on it or apply weights to it to get the PVC to flatten, the tip will become almost completely flat, whereas the handle will stay the thickness of the full round pipe. That's the important part.
All right.
Once you've done that, the next step would be to actually heat up your handle. If this is another thing, if you want a little extra performance, you can heat up your handle, and then with a cloth or something to protect yourself from the heat, you can actually press it so that the handle is a little narrower from side to side, so it's a little thicker in the hand, and your arrows will not have to wrap around the bow as much.
Right, so you're sort of not flattening it completely, but you're compressing it side to side, perpendicular to the way you flattened the limbs of the bow.
Yes, but only slightly, because if you do that too much, then the handle will want to actually collapse from side to side. So a good amount would be you want to flatten it sideways no more than a quarter of an inch.
Okay. Now that we've done our flattening of the limbs and of the handle, what do we do next?
Now, the next thing you want to do is you'll want to cut notches for your string. And these notches can be done a variety of different ways. If you have a knife, you could actually whittle a V-groove into the tips of your bow. And you want these notches to be about half an inch to three-quarters of an inch in from the tips of your bow. And to make a simple bow.
If I'm looking at the flattened limb and I'm staring at the flat part straight on, as if I'm holding the bow in my hand and looking at the back of the limb, there's going to be a little V cutout on the left and the right as I stare at that limb, right?
Yes, and it's going to be very slight, about a quarter of an inch or so deep.
And a couple of inches down from the tip, you said?
About half an inch to three-quarters of an inch from the top.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so
once I've cut those notches, what's my next step?
So now you have two options. You can either go on to making a string, and you'll have a longbow. Or you can, what's called, recurve the tips, and you'll have a recurve.
So in a recurve bow, I'm actually going to create sort of almost an S shape with the bow, or sort of half of one.
Yes, and it's going to face away. When you're holding the bow like you're ready to shoot, the tips are going to actually face away from you.
Okay, so if I want to make a recurve bow and not just a long bow out of my PVC, what do I do?
So to make the recurve, a simple way to do this is to simply reheat the tip, and you want to heat about 6 to 8 inches of the tip. A good way to measure this would be to actually take your hand, make a fist, and then make a thumbs up, and that distance should be approximately 6 to 7 inches, which is a good benchmark for how far in you want to measure. You want to heat up that portion, and what's going to happen is as you heat up the pipe, it will get soft and flexible to the point where you can move it and force it into a bend, but you don't want to heat it too much, because if you heat the pipe up too much, it will actually return to its full round shape.
Right, so I don't want to unflatten it while I'm heating it.
Yes, so you want to heat it a little bit, and once you've got that, all you need to do is actually form it over any curved surface that you can repeat, and if you're at home, you can use, say, a 6-inch or an 8-inch diameter pot, or you can use a ceramic flower pot, or you could cut a form out of 2x4. Or if you were, say, out in the field and you were trying to put a recurve, one thing that you could do is put a towel or a cloth on your leg to dissipate the heat, to keep it from getting to your leg, and actually use your leg as a form to get a curve.
So I'm actually bending the limb of the bow forward over this curve, creating like a hook shape that will look a lot like a real bow once we put the string on, if I'm gathering correctly.
Yes, it's going to be a hook shape. And one thing to keep in mind is you want to make sure that you're doing this to the side of the bow that's facing away from you. So when you hold the bow and you're holding it as if you were to shoot it, the tips will come up and then go forward and away from you, not towards you.
Right. Okay. Once I've heated and molded a recurve into both of the limbs, I assume I need to do both sides.
Yes.
What's the next step?
The next step is making your string.
Okay, before we get to that, what are the advantages of the recurve over, like, why go to the extra effort of making that recurve bow as opposed to just putting my string on once I've made my longbow?
The advantages to the recurve, there are a few advantages. The basic advantage is that it will give you a little more speed and a little more power. And not only that, but it'll actually give your bow more draw weight, which is a way to say that when you're pulling on the bow, the amount of force it takes to pull the bow to full draw. When you make a recurve, you can...
Go ahead.
What was that? When you put the recurves into the PVC bow, you can expect anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds gained.
I know that a child's bow is typically somewhere between like 25 and 35 pounds, a youth bow. Is that right?
Yes.
And a man's bow can be somewhere between, typically somewhere between 50 and 100 pounds, I'm thinking?
Yes.
So what kind of draw weight are we able to get out of a typical PVC bow?
Okay. So the draw weight is mainly dictated by the diameter you start with. So for the 3/4-inch bow, the max weight you could safely get out of it would be about 40 to 45 pounds.
Okay.
And it would be a very short bow. When strung up, it would be about 3.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're using 1-inch pipe, you can safely get a bow that's around 60 pounds. And if you wanted to push it, you could go even further to 70 or 80 pounds. But generally, the heavier the bow you want to make, you want to go up to the next diameter of pipe. For example, you can easily make an 80-pound bow with 1 1/4-inch pipe.
Right, and that's purely a function of the amount of power it takes to flex the PVC of that thickness?
Yes.
Okay. Before we get into bowstrings, what would you say are the pitfalls when making your own PVC bow? What are the mistakes that I need to watch out for while I'm doing this?
One common mistake is you want to, like I said, you want to make sure that you don't burn any part of it, because if you burn the pipe, or sometimes you'll actually heat the pipe up to where it looks almost glossy, almost glassy in one spot, and it'll still look white, but it'll look glossy. And what's happened is that you've actually melted the pipe to the point where it's reformed into a different structure. So what'll happen is that if the pipe is under strain, or is under excessive strain, you know, this is true as you make your bows shorter, and especially if you pass kind of a safe range, what could happen is that area could actually snap. Another thing to watch out for is to make sure that there are no harsh bends or harsh creases in any part of the bow. Because best case scenario, the bow will actually collapse, meaning that the plastic is flexible enough to where if it gets too weak in that creased spot, it'll kind of fold on the crease. And worst case scenario, the bow could snap, which is a risk with really any bow. Another thing to keep in mind.
Looking out for things like crimps in the PVC when I'm done working with it.
Yes. And if you do see any crimps, what you could do is you can actually heat that section up gently and the pipe will start to puff out and reform to its cylindrical shape. And then what you can do is you can gently press on it and keep it to the same size that it was before so that you can actually shape it by hand and actually get rid of any creases or crimps that way.
So it's safe to say that under heat, PVC wants to return to its original cylindrical shape unless you heat it too much, in which case you actually make it brittle?
Yes.
Okay. And what are some other mistakes to watch out for while I'm making my PVC bow?
Another mistake would be making sure that this is not too important for longbows, because with longbows, the string will actually never touch the bow once it gets past the points where the string is attached. But with the recurve, the string actually has to sit on the tip of the bow. And so it's very important that if you were to hold the bow from one tip, place one end on the ground and look straight down, it should be a straight line. So if you could visualize a string being on the bow, it needs to sit in the middle of both tips and go across the middle of the bow. And so this can be done by heating the bow and actually flexing from side to side certain areas to line those points up. Otherwise, what will happen is the string will actually slip off of the bow and the bow will unstring itself. And sometimes it can actually sort of whip around in your hand.
Now, is that dangerous?
It's not. With the PVC bows, it's not that dangerous. It's more going to make a lot of noise. And, you know, if you were, say, trying to stalk something, it would definitely know you were there. But it wouldn't be dangerous per se. Now, if this happened on some of the, like, some wood bows, this could be dangerous because when the bow snaps back to its shape, it could break. But the PVC seems to be very resilient as long as it's not made too short.
Any other possible mistakes we need to look out for?
Another possible mistake would be, this is kind of like a fine-tuning sort of exercise. When your bow is strung up, what will sometimes happen is one side of the bow will look like it's bending a lot more than the other side. And that's because one limb, for some reason, is weaker than the other side. In order to fix this, what you do is you take the side that is bending too much and you'd want to heat up that whole limb and let it expand just a little bit. Make sure it doesn't expand to full cylindrical shape, but just a little bit more expansion will actually strengthen that limb. And then when you let that cool and you string the bow up again, you can check it again and it should be more balanced. That's another problem that could happen.
All right. Well, before we move on, anything else you want to touch on about what to look out for?
Let's see. The only other thing I could think about is, when you're making the bow, when you've made your bow, your bow will typically be safer to use and will last longer if it has what's called a deflex to it, meaning that at some point the bow does sort of flex back to you, and this will usually happen once you've shot a bow out a few times. Like I said, it will take that permanent deformation where, you know, it's sort of taken the shape that it was pulled into by the string. And what will happen is that if you try too hard with the PVC to make sure that, say, it stays perfectly straight, or in the case of recurves, that the points of the bow extend in front of your handle a large amount, this could actually cause the bow to be under too much strain, and it could possibly break.
Gotcha. All right, now let's talk about strings. Obviously, you can buy bow strings. You can buy them online. You can buy them in most stores that sell archery equipment. And I can think of nothing better to keep in your bug-out bag or in your survival gear other than a few extra bow strings, especially because they're so cheap and they take up almost no space and they weigh almost nothing. But let's say, for sake of argument, that I'm building a bow and I don't have bow strings. What do I do?
Well, if you don't have a bowstring, there are a lot of materials that can be made into bowstrings. Now, one of the benefits to the PVC bows is that while they can be just as fast as a lot of modern bows, because they're so flexible, they're usually a lot more forgiving on string materials. Now, when you're making a string, there are lots of materials you can use. There are some commercial bowstring materials that you can buy. One of the most commonly used ones, especially for older longbows and recurves, is called B50 Dacron, or Dacron bowstrings, or polyester bowstring material. Now, if you can't
where would I
buy that, normally you'd have to buy that from a sporting goods store or an archery pro shop or a shop that specializes in archery. Now, if you didn't have access to that, an alternative that is fairly similar would actually be Dacron fishing line. Now, this is usually a trolling line or a heavy grade of braided fishing line, and these are made out of multiple strands of a material. It's not the monofilament nylon fishing line that most people are familiar with. It's a line that is also used for tying lures and fly fishing. But it's a good type of material to use if you can get it. Now, if you were going down to the hardware store, there are some options you could use for making strings. For one, most hardware stores will carry nylon rope or nylon mason twine. And if you can get nylon rope that's about an eighth of an inch or a little bit thicker, that will actually work for most bows, most PVC bows, up to about 50 pounds. Beyond that, nylon will get a little stretchy, so you'll actually lose some performance, which is why, you know, nylon isn't the best material. Another thing, are you familiar with parachute cord?
Yes, I've got tons of the stuff around here, 550 paracord.
Yep, 550 paracord will work as a bowstring. Now, the only downside is that it will stretch quite a bit, so when you're trying to figure out how long your string needs to be, it will generally be about 8 to 9 inches, if not more. It'll be shorter than your actual bow length. Whereas
right.
A string material that didn't stretch, like if you were to go out and buy a bow string, your string should be about 3 to 4 inches shorter than your bow length.
So if my bow length is 4 feet, then a commercial bow string, I would want one that is 3 feet, 8 inches, let's say?
Around there.
And if it was instead a paracord that I had, I would want to cut a length of paracord that was closer to 3 feet, maybe even just 3 feet, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah, depending on what you're doing, yes.
All right. Any other possible improvised bowstring materials? You know, assuming that I'm not some, like, if I can go to a commercial archery store and buy this material,
yes.
I could buy bowstrings. So
just
what are some more improvised bowstring materials I can make?
In most cases, dental floss. If you take it and actually just pull out enough strands, or you can make a thickness that is around an eighth of an inch thick.
So you mean actually weave dental floss together as a multi-strand line?
Yes, and a simple way to do this would be, it's like building a simple rope. You would simply take two bundles that are about equal size and longer than the string you want to make, and then you actually twist both bundles in the same direction and then allow them to twist together, essentially
now,
making a simple rope out of it.
How much dental floss am I going to need to actually make a bowstring? Is there enough in a single container of dental floss to do that?
Now, depending on the type of dental floss, if you take the dental floss and take a length of it in both hands and pull on it, about half of the dental floss is made out of nylon. It will stretch a lot, and it will probably break in your hands. And another type of dental floss is actually made out of a material that's known as Dyneema, which is kind of a modern filament, and it's very high tensile strength. And so if you can find dental floss that is made of Dyneema, and this varies from brand. Some brands use, you know, both Dyneema and nylon. But that will actually, you can use less of it because it will be able to withstand the stress.
Well, have you ever tried to make a bowstring out of dental floss?
If
you How much
really
you
needed a bowstring, just about any kind of strong material. And by
Did
strong
I
material,
you?
I mean...
Hmm? Oh, there you are. You dropped out for a minute there. How much dental floss would you have to use if you actually were to make a bowstring? I mean, I can't recall how many feet of dental floss is in a typical container.
Let's see. You would need about... You would need about at least 10 to 15 actual lengths of it. So that depends on how long your bow is.
Right. So in terms of actual number of, setting aside the number of different rolls of dental floss I would need, how many feet of dental floss would I actually need to have on hand in order to make a bowstring for a 4-foot bow?
For a 4-foot bow, you would need about, I would say, about 40 to 60 feet.
Gotcha. And do you happen to know, I can't recall how many feet is in a typical roll of dental floss. It's a fairly impressive amount, but I'm thinking I would probably need at least a few containers.
Let's see. I'm not exactly sure how much is in one container of dental floss.
Well, when we're done here, I'll have to go to the medicine cabinet and satisfy my curiosity. Are there any other materials that I might improvise a bowstring out of? We've talked about dental floss. We've talked about paracord. We've talked about nylon rope. Anything else that we might consider?
If you can find, especially if you're in a hardware store, or most places will carry either mason line. Are you familiar with nylon mason twine?
Not actually. What is nylon mason twine?
It's usually used as a marking line, you know, when doing masonry or...
Oh, for like chalk line.
Make you straight. Yes, like for chalk lines. That, as well as polypropylene twine, which is used a lot for bundling packages. If you use about 4 to 5 strands of it, and you don't even need to really weave them together. You could actually take your strands and then tie a knot at each end. They're usually strong enough to hold up.
Right.
So that you've basically effectively turn these multiple strands into one loose rope.
Okay.
But that'll work in a pinch.
Is there a specific knot you would recommend for tying bow strings together to make one string out of separate parts?
If you're really in a pinch, you could just tie a simple, simple overhand knot. Two of those would secure the end of a string, you know, as if you were tying a loop, say, for a slip knot. Another way to secure the ends together would be to more or less weave them together like you were weaving rope, but you know, that's a little more complicated to explain just by talking about it.
Gotcha.
Another way to do it as well would be to actually, once you've got your string together, you want to actually take a thinner or the same material you used and actually wrap it tightly as if you were lashing the string together, just by wrapping the string around and securing it by pulling it through itself, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Okay, we've talked about bowstrings. We've built the bow. We're leaving out something very, very important. Obviously, you could use any number of commercial arrows with your homemade bow and your homemade string. But what happens when you run out of those? How do I make my own arrows and arrowheads, and what do I do in that situation?
Well, in that situation, there are many things that could be used to make arrows. And one of the benefits to the PVC bows most of the commercial longbows and recurves are that arrows can generally be made, safe arrows can be generally made fairly easily. You know, if you're in an area where you can find things from civilization, you could use a whole number of things. You know, wooden dowels can be used to make arrows. You know, they should be no thinner than 5/16 of an inch. And when selecting the dowels, you want to make sure that not only are the dowels straight, but you want to make sure that the grain is straight, because if there are any knots or the grain is wavy, what could happen is that the arrow could break on you. You know, another thing to look for are river cane or bamboo, because these naturally grow, and if you can find them around the diameter of an arrow, these can be easily cut, straightened with heat, and just by gently heating it up, almost as you would the PVC and flexing it gently, you could easily make arrow shafts using that. Or you could even use shoots from hardwood trees. You know, if you're in a forested area, if you can find shoots that are roughly the size of your arrow, you know, which would be the length of your draw, which for most people is around 26 to 30 inches. If you could find shoots of that size, you could easily make arrow shafts out of that. And once you have your arrow shafts, you know, points, the simplest way to sharpen or to make a point for an arrow would simply be to sharpen the point on a piece of wood. You know, you could harden it on a fire. But another thing you could think about is for points, you could use any kind of scrap metal you could find can be fashioned into a point.
Now, how would I, another, let's say I make some sharpened triangles from scrap metal, how do I affix that to the end of the arrow?
A simple way to affix that to your arrow would be to actually cut some notches toward the back end of the thicker end of the triangle, or the wider end of the triangle, and then cut a notch about a quarter of an inch deep. You could use a saw if you had one, like a survival saw, or you could use a knife and just cut a little bit of a notch into the front end of your arrow. And then you would need some sort of thread or string. You could use any sort of anything really that you could wrap around that point and that notch, and actually you could simply wrap that point to the notch. And when
so you're
making
you're arrows, lashing the arrowhead to the shaft of the arrow like you're making a tiny spear.
Yes, it's essentially what an arrow is.
Okay, and what about the fletching? What about the feathers on the end of the arrow? Do I need to deal with that?
If you want a little more range, the fletching will actually help stabilize the arrow in flight. And ideally, you'd want to use bird feathers. You can buy commercial fletching, but you could also get feathers if you needed to make arrows in the field. One very simple technique, and it's a technique that's been done by Native Americans as well as a lot of primitive bow makers and arrow makers, is to actually take three good-sized, about 5-inch long feathers from the tail of a bird. Some the feathers that are, a good width, maybe about 1 inch to 2 inches wide. And you'd actually take three of these, place them around the back of your arrow, about 1 inch away from the end. And you would actually tie the front ends of the feathers and the back ends of the feathers to the arrow. And so without actually cutting anything, you've made a 3-vane arrow that will fly fairly straight. It'll
right,
fly
because
through.
It's my understanding that the purpose of the fletching is much like tying a piece of cloth to the end of a dart, a hand-thrown dart. It helps level out the projectile in flight as it flies through the air?
Yes, and you could also use strips of cloth. Another technique you could use is if you're good with carving and whittling with a knife, you could actually cut, going from the back of the arrow to the front, you could actually cut little curls of wood that would help catch the air and give some drag to it.
Right. So just like the darts that I mentioned, those Chinese throwing darts, you could be tying cloth to the end of the arrow again to help drag the back end down so that it flies straight instead of, flying sideways.
Yes. And another thing you could do as well is if you absolutely can't find anything for fletching is that you could simply make your arrow longer. And your bow would essentially become a spear thrower in that regard. So instead of making an arrow that's about 2.5 feet long, a little more than 2.5 feet long, you'd be making an arrow that's about 3 to 4 feet long. And that extra length and the extra forward weight would also help stabilize the arrow, but this would bring the effective range of the arrow down to within maybe 10 yards.
Okay, well, we've talked about building all of the components. Now I want to talk, obviously you can't teach us how to become archers in this format and in the time we have available to us, but what are the basic principles of applying survival archery here? I've got my bow, I've got my arrow. What are the body mechanics I need to know to shoot that into something?
Well, what you want to do is, as far as a basic stance you could take, you want to stand perpendicular to your target. So you're standing up and you're actually facing, you're not facing your target, you're facing away, with your shoulders, or with your feet about shoulders width apart. And what you would do is you would hold your bow in your offhand. So if you're right eye dominant, you'd want to hold the bow in your left hand. And if you're left eye dominant, you want to hold the bow in your right hand.
And here's a good time to point out to everyone listening, if they don't know what that means, that most people who are right-handed are also right-eye dominant and vice versa, but not all of them. So if you stick out your right hand, if you're right-handed, and you point it like a gun, and you close one eye to sight down your handgun, then most of the time you're closing your left eye. And if you try that out yourself, you'll be able to tell which eye dominant you are by which eye you instinctively close when you're aiming.
That's right. And so what you want to do is, you know, get into that stance, and you want to hold the bow, you know, straight up and down, or you can actually tilt it a little, especially if you're using, you know, like a PVC bow that doesn't have an arrow rest or an arrow shelf on it, and it'll actually help keep the arrow on the bow. And one of the advantages to canting your bow is that once you've broken from going straight up and down, you're actually able to maneuver your bow differently depending on your circumstances, because not always will you have the opportunity to stand straight and have your bow sticking straight up and down. You know, sometimes you'll have to crouch or kneel or be shooting through brush or under things or over things. A good way to practice, so what you're doing is, you know, once you're in your stance, you've got your bow in your offhand, you want to grab your string, and your arrow ideally should have a notch at the end that is about a quarter of an inch deep that will actually go onto your string. So you're actually not holding the arrow onto the string, but you, when you draw the bow, you're actually holding the string with one finger above the arrow and two fingers below on the string. And when you're getting ready to shoot, you want to aim in the direction you want to fire, and then you want to draw your dominant hand back. And one of the good ways to get consistent with this is to pick what's called an anchor point, meaning that when you draw your hand back, it ends up in the same spot every time. And an easy way to do this is to actually draw your hand all the way back till it touches, say, the corner of your mouth or, you know, the corner of your jaw. And so whenever you go to shoot, you make sure that your arrow is anchored in the same spot every time.
Now, I'm assuming you're sighting down the shaft of the arrow itself. Is the arrow sitting on, if I'm right eye dominant and I'm pulling it back with my right hand and holding the bow with my left hand, is the arrow sitting on the left side of the bow or the right side of the bow, the outside or the inside?
It's sitting on the left side of the bow. So it's actually the arrow's on the side, is on your arm side.
Okay, so it's you could conceivably be resting the arrow shaft on your off hand that is also holding the bow.
Yes, and if your bow is simple in that it doesn't have a rest like some of the commercial bows do, you know, a lot of survival bows don't have rest, you'd actually be resting it on your hand.
Okay.
And one thing is that with archery, especially when you're dealing with ranges, you know, within 30 yards, the way I shoot typically, especially in, which is really applicable for survival situations, is called instinctive archery or instinctive shooting, where you're not paying attention so much to the arrow, you're not sighting down the arrow so much as it takes a little practice, but you look at your target and you want to get yourself set up so that you're always holding the bow in the same place. You could wrap a piece of, you know, cloth or something to sort of tell yourself where you're holding the bow. You want your arrow to rest on the bow at the same place every time, and you want to draw back to your same anchor. And once you've built that up, you just want to keep practice shooting your bow so that you can look at something and without really paying attention to what the bow is doing or what the arrow is doing, you simply line up yourself. And then when you release, you simply let go. You don't want to forcibly throw your hand or pluck the string. You just want to release your fingers and the arrow will go. And that way you'll be aiming not so much with the bow or the arrow, but aiming with yourself is the best way to put it.
All right. Well, that leads me to my next question, which is what about training for a survival scenario where I'm not just shooting at a stationary target, I'm not just shooting at something that doesn't necessarily shoot back. Do you have any tips for survival archery, things that I can keep in mind when, you know, this is the type of archery that really counts and not just target shooting?
With target shooting, you know, there's a different mentality. You want to usually keep your bow straight up and down so that you minimize variables. But when you want to practice, you know, shooting actual moving targets, a good way to practice this is actually to find a nice open space where you're not going to shoot at anything or anyone. And a good way to start practicing is to, you can start out with stationary targets, but you can pick anything, you know, soccer balls, cans, anything that you can put out at a decent range and, you know, just practice hitting these objects. You know, you could start bigger, but it's all about trying to figure out, okay, if I see that, you know, what do I look for? How do I know how to hit it? And just by practicing and getting down where you can hit this object. Another thing you can start doing, especially if you are using like a soccer ball, is you go ahead and you kick the soccer ball, and as the soccer ball is rolling away from you, you know, try to shoot it. Try to anticipate, you know, where it's going to be. And, you know, or you could have somebody help you by bouncing a ball or rolling a soccer ball at an angle or in front of you so that, you know, you get sort of this idea of how to anticipate a target's movement. Another thing you could do, which is sometimes referred to as in-flight archery, is you can actually shoot at flying targets. And usually when you do that, you want to make sure that your arrows, the fletchings, are actually called flufus in this case, meaning they're actually a lot bigger than normal fletchings. So where a normal feather would be about 3/4 of an inch to an inch tall, they could be as much as 1.5 to 2 inches or more. And what happens is that the excess drag on the end of your arrow will actually cause it to fall out of the air after about 40 yards or so. This way you can practice shooting at, you know, thrown balls or, you know, thrown frisbees or even clay pigeons. And so this is more practice for if you ever wanted to go and shoot, you know, birds in flight or birds that are, you know, about to take off, you know, or animals that are very fast.
Do people actually hunt birds with bows?
Yes. Most of the time when you're hunting with, you know, hunting birds with a bow, you do have to keep in mind that, you know, you usually try to go for birds that are stationary or are about to take flight. Once they've already started flying, you know, it's kind of hard to get it. Birds in flight are very hard to get, though it is possible. It has been done.
All right.
But
well,
usually,
go ahead, Nicholas.
But usually it comes down to sort of training your instinct rather than aiming or sighting, because once things start moving, actual aiming becomes very difficult with a bow.
While I have you here, Nicholas, are there any commercial survival bows that you recommend?
As far as commercial bows for survival, there are bows that break down, meaning that you can actually take them apart and they'll store into a smaller place. And these are good to have with you. You know, you can take it in your car. Another thing I forgot to mention about the PVC bows is that because PVC is so forgiving and flexible, it's very easy to actually take your finished recurve or longbow and cut it up into smaller sections, and then connect those with slightly larger pieces of PVC pipe, effectively making sleeves. So what I'm saying is you could take your 4 foot or your 5 foot long bow and actually break it down into foot long or less sections that can be transported or placed in a small container or bag.
How do you secure them when you put them inside the larger PVC pieces?
What you do is you actually heat the larger PVC pieces. Now, what will happen is that with the PVC pipes, the smaller pipes do not easily fit inside of the larger pipes because the larger pipes are actually too small. And what you do is you heat them up gently enough so that you can expand the pipe and actually slip it like a sleeve over your bow to reassemble it in that way. And once you've done that,
what you've got is a friction fit when it's completed.
Yes.
So that you can take it apart and it's held together by friction.
Yes.
Oh.
And it actually, these bows will actually hold together.
While we're on the topic, what can you tell me about crossbows? Is that an option, or are any thoughts on that?
Crossbows are generally good. A benefit to crossbows is if you were ever injured in any way, it's a lot easier to load a crossbow and have it prepared and ready to go than a bow. Another thing, too, is that it's typically easier to aim because you've cut out a lot of variables. And if you were to get a crossbow, I suggest recurve crossbows, meaning non-compound crossbows, because it opens up your ability to make your own bolts or arrows for your crossbow. Because if you have a recurve crossbow, you could easily make your own makeshift arrows or bolts out of dowels or chain or shoots, just the way you would make regular arrows.
All right. Well, are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with? This has been a very informative discussion, and I can tell you, for my sake, I'm going to go right out and obtain the materials I need and actually give this a try. I'm curious if you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave with us on the subject.
Any final thoughts? I would say that, if anybody wanted to get into it, this is an easy way to get into archery. If you did want to get a bow for survival purposes, and, this kind of goes back to your question on commercial bows, what I would say is that from my experience, I would go for bows that even though they're not as fast or, they don't have the speeds as a lot of the modern composites, is to go for a solid material bow, like a solid fiberglass bow, because these are usually really durable. They can take a lot more abuse than bows that are made out of multiple materials laminated together because, if humidity gets into those laminations, even waterproof glues can fail. And, they'll last a lot longer. My first real bow was actually a solid fiberglass bow that was made in the 60s, and it's still shooting just as good today as it was when it was first made.
So you're saying a good bow can easily last a lifetime and then some?
Yes.
All right. Well, Nicholas Tomihama, it has been a pleasure to speak with you on the topic of making your own survival bow. I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank everyone who participated and sent in their questions. As always, this is the fastest hour of my week, and actually I think we ran a little bit over tonight. I was so into the discussion. Nicholas, thank you very much for joining us here on the ISCQC.
Good, thank you.
All right. Well, for Jeff Anderson here at the ISCQC, and on my behalf, I am Buck Green, your broadcast director. I want to thank you for joining us here for the latest edition of Survival Talk Radio. This has been a distinct pleasure, and I have got a lot of building to do, and I can imagine more than a few of you do as well. As always, for Jeff Anderson of the ISCQC and on my own behalf, thank you, train hard, and stay safe.